Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethea, and today's date is March the 31st, 2024, Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, we are bringing you a special edition, Sunday broadcast edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. This week has been a very, very, very busy week for yours truly here. I'm your host, Ronald Bethea, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, you know that the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African and African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the high effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses, to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects, to bring down the under and underemployment of African and African-American youth locally, nationally, and throughout the diaspora. Also, to educate the African and African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America, which you're listening to right now over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are also streaming via Twitter, X, and LinkedIn. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a scheduled guest today, but we've picked a very, very exciting program because everybody's talking about what are we going to do with the youth? How are we going to train our youth? What do we do when they're coming out of the systems, which we know as the jail systems and the criminal justice system in this country? And we're going to look at opportunities, and we're going to share some of those opportunities with our listening audience today. But first, ladies and gentlemen, you know if you want to join us on this program, that our call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number, because you'll be in our room, green room, and we want to bring you right on into our living room and set you down so we can have this conversation. But ladies and gentlemen, on March 5th of this year, 2024, there was a very interesting second chance hiring in energy webinar that was produced, and this was done by the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Energy, Justice, and Equity. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do what we do. We're going to jump right on it into that. But first, we're going to sort of set the table. The Second Chance Hiring is an ongoing online series of from the Office of Energy Justice and Equity at the U.S. Department of Energy. This series of aims to advance the Second Chances initiatives from the Biden administration as we address recidivism through opportunities in the clean energy sector, the justice impacted communities. Policy for this program is directed by the Executive Order 14035, expanding employment opportunities for formerly incarcerated individuals. Meeting agendas will center around the building bridges with community partners, industry employees, state and federal agencies with a clear vision to promote good jobs for justice, involve individuals. Discussions will focus on developing solutions for both energy industry leaders interested in adopting equitable fair chance hiring practice and applicant seeking pathways to careers in energy facing unique obstacles erected by the justice system. Key stakeholders from community-based organizations focused on reentry, energy employers, government agencies, policymakers from the national to local levels will convene to showcase the best business strategies, eliminate employment barriers, demystify the hiring process for both job seekers and employees, and debunk misconceptions surrounding careers and those impacted in the justice system. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we're going to jump right on into our recording today on Second Chance Hiring.
Okay, everybody. My name is Robert Fitzman-Horn. I'm a Management Program Analyst with the Minority Business Workforce Division, the Office of Energy Justice and Equity at the Department of Energy. I direct our reentry workforce development project we call Second Chance Hiring and Energy. And today I have the pleasure of both to our series and today's event. So before we start, I'd like to introduce you EJ's work at the DOE. Next slide. So the mission of our small but mighty is that everyone is afforded an opportunity to participate fully in the Department of Energy's program of opportunities and resources. There's a couple of executive orders we'll be working off of from today, but to save time, I'll move forward to talk more about this series. Next slide. This series, we seek to convene stakeholders in a variety of industries to focus on energy and reentry, to highlight why this is important and how to get it done. So we hope that we'll be able to demystify the process to disrupt stereotypes associated with first-hand hiring. We also hope to both provide examples to highlight resources to support your mission and the broader task of electrifying and employing all of America equitably. So, in both the wider series and today's discussion, we have three audiences in mind. First are employers, second are job seekers, and third is an assorted body of community benefits organizations like union leaders, apprenticeships, educators, local government officials, et cetera. All of these groups who help prepare and support justice all at every step of the way. So last time we looked at the macroeconomic business case for fair chance hiring, and then we also explored the foundational role that these community benefit organizations, staffing agencies, provide in convening the justice-involved job seekers with employers. So today, in part two of our series, we'll be looking at both careers and energy for applicants and funding opportunities for employers. So there's a lot of resources available, and we hope today's will give you ideas about how to access some of them in your communities to serve your needs. So just a brief housekeeping note, please make sure you're muted if you're not speaking. Also, please send questions to the chat box. We probably will only have time for a couple questions briefly to do a Q&A session at the end, but we still want to follow up with you if we can. Yes, the video will be shared and posted on our website. You saw the comment there in the chat. So let's get to it. Next slide, please. I want to set the table for today. which capture why this is so important to our nation. Most of you are aware of the ethical aspects, of course, of reducing recidivism through employment, but I think the business case is one of the most compelling ways to both highlight the injustice and motivate us to make change. So by mid-2022, the economy in the U.S. saw both the highest post-pandemic growth and the lowest inflation rates of any industrialized economy. We also set a record for the longest stretch of unemployment below 4% in a bipartisan infrastructure law. We also witnessed 13 million jobs added in over 2 years, just over 2 years. That's nearly 800,000 in manufacturing alone. And we also saw over 10 million applicants for small businesses. Those and other investments totaled $490 billion in private investments. Next slide. The problem is that there are major constraints for the nation, and especially for the justice. So there's nearly 19 million felony convictions in our nation today. Recidivism rates are as high as 67%. 27% unemployment for formerly incarcerated. 60 to 75% of former prisoners are unemployed for up to a year after their release, saying nothing about it. So the formerly incarcerated also compose only 1% of the energy workforce. Next slide. So economist Jeffrey Korzenich highlights the national economic emergency, stating that by mid-2022, our workforce saw some of the greatest gaps we've seen in decades. So think about this. We've had, on the one hand, 11 million jobs. That's great news. But only 6 million jobs have been cut. So I hope these numbers speak for themselves. We really, as a nation, we really have our work cut out. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our speakers. We've got another star-studded cast of experts today, beginning with, first off, my colleague, James Mosley. Next slide, please. Talking about careers in energy and doing business with the government. James will be followed by Zach Poole, the Director of National Policy at Just Leadership USA. He'll be talking about their Just Us Coordinating Council. After Zach, we'll hear from Carrie Pruitt, author and executive director of the Bandage Project, a nonprofit based in Atlanta, Georgia. She'll be sharing about their work with at-risk youth and formerly incarcerated persons with employment opportunities. Then Carrie will be followed by our partners at the Employment Training Administration of the Department of Labor. First, we'll have Charlotte Harris. She serves as Chief for the Partnership Innovation Unit in the DOL's Division of Adult Services and Governance. And then next, her colleague Alex Ming. He serves as Chief of Reentry at the DOL's Office of Workforce. Together, they'll talk about a variety of grants they manage serving our nation's workforce development system and specifically how to access these resources to the local American job seekers. So with that, I'd like to pass it off to our first speaker and my colleague, Mr. James Mosley. James?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Hello, my name is James Mosley with the U.S. Department of Energy. For this presentation, we're going to cover four areas of funding, resources, and general employment for entrepreneurship for entry-level jobs in energy. In accordance with Executive Order 14035, expanding employment opportunities for formerly incarcerated individuals, our goal is to strengthen relationships with community partners, foster information sharing with workers, and bring employers to the table for Americans involved in the justice system who are now or have spent time in jail, youth correctional facility, or prison. Next slide. What funding are we talking about? Right quick, if you don't know what you're looking for, how do you know where to find it? With this question, it's important to understand current government funding process that's stimulating the energy revolution going on across the nation right now. With this slide, we see the Inflation Reduction Act, CHIPS and Science Act, and the Bipartisan Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act. But these acts that became laws, they are major funding programs currently on the table and that's stimulating the new energy transition. This energy transition refers to the global shift in energy from fossil-based systems to energy production and consumption to include oil, natural gas, coal, to the renewable energy sources like wind and solar. So have you driven around your community and seen solar farms or wind projects, maybe geothermal systems or offshore wind projects happening? This innovation is being stimulated in part by these laws. This is the largest vehicle for this program is $1.2 trillion from the Bipartisan Infrastructure and Jobs Act. And a lot of people might not even understand what that type of money looks like. 1.2 $1 trillion in loans, you could stack $1 bills on top of each other, circle the entire equator well over 2.5 times. With this type of funding, it's being called once-in-a-lifetime investment in our nation's infrastructure to upgrade roads, make bridges, build wind farms, and so many other investments in infrastructure all across the nation. And if you know what you're looking for, community level as a workforce program can also help you. So first we're going to break down this funding, all right? Once this policy was signed into law by President Biden, the clock started. The federal agencies across all federal governments have different programs focused on distributing these dollars, but this is how it's being distributed within the Department of Energy. First, we see the $650 billion, which was allotted for things that were already going to happen in this environment. Then we go over to the $550 billion that focuses on new spending, new projects. This means things that have never been done before in government, like the electric school bus program from the EPA. This is where the money is coming from. Programs like the investment, Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act, surface transportation and core infrastructure. And this will stimulate jobs if you know how to find them. And I'm going to show you that process. Next slide, please. So these are the four categories that the spending will be focused on: surface infrastructure, core infrastructure, climate, building, and energy. Now, with surface transportation and core infrastructure, it's not if these projects will get funded. They are currently being funded all across the nation. So how do we find these projects at the local level? Well, in a few different ways. Two websites that I like to refer people to are the AmericanProgress.org and invest.gov. But you'll need to also know your congressionals by using these websites, and that can be found through a quick Google search. Next slide, please. DOE workforce training programs. The next thing is, once you find these programs, you need to engage with the winners of funding, like your state energy office, your local nonprofit, or industry. And industry is highlighted in yellow because industry is going to include anyone who has applied for this funding and won, okay? When these entities apply for funding, you should engage with them to see if the program supports workforce training or job program for your situation. And engagement means checking the website, looking for news alerts, going on their Twitter page, advertisements, and email them to find out what the current programs on the table. On this page, every program that you see right here is a current workforce training program from our state and community energy programs. Department of Energy currently has 17 different program offices doing various things within the country. But this is how you find these dollars as they go from legislation to the ground level into a workforce training program. The most important part about this process is that currently all 50 states and U.S. territories have received funding from the Bipartisan Infrastructure and Investment Law, every one of them. And this has created jobs and training programs one way or another in those communities. Whether you see the opportunity or not, it's only based on knowing what you're looking at, tackling the climate change, tackling the climate crisis. And this directs 40% of the overall benefits of certain federal investments to flow to disadvantaged communities. Now, let's say that how do you engage with these particular programs? What does this mean at the community-based level? Well, when these organizations apply for funding, they have to put out community benefit plans. And what a community benefit plan is basically going to focus on four major things: engaging with the local labor, investing in workers, quality jobs, advancing 40 Initiative. For more information about community benefit plans and the Justice 40 Initiative, we have an entire webpage dedicated to that process, which can be found on our resource page at the end of this presentation. Next slide, please. Now we're moving over to jobs within energy. This is the process of understanding the jobs in energy. Okay, next slide. Why engage with energy? The U.S. energy industry is a significant, complex environment encompassing various sectors such as gas, oil, electricity, electric, generation and distribution, renewable energy, nuclear, and more. Challenging to provide a single measure for this due to its large size. However, one fact to consider is this. Jobs in this environment are growing in demand. Energy is one of the most critical parts of a modern society. Everyone needs the lights to work. And in a recent report by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, energy ranked as one of the nation's fastest growing markets. And today, more than 1.8 million Americans currently work in this industry in various roles. According to a report by the U.S. Energy Report, after COVID-19 pandemic, we continue to grow jobs in this environment. In that same study, there's a need for over 70,000 electricians yearly needed in this environment. These jobs pay very well, and typically, entry level for these positions that you see here only require a high school diploma or equivalent to enter the industry. Now, I know that everyone might not want to be an electrician, but there's also thousands of support jobs that also help keep the lights on. Now, there's a lot of legislation in different states where licensing boards keep people with background issues from being credentialed in this particular environment of energy. This is where our involvement with our community partners like JLUSA is important to help try to promote these jobs and help try to promote people in this environment. Next slide, please. Federal resources. So this is a question I'm often asked. Can I work in government if I have a criminal record? The answer to this is yes. You can work in government if you have a criminal record and was formerly incarcerated. And this is how the policy goes. Federal agencies are generally required to consider people with criminal records if they have, if they comply with the job requirements. However, there are some exceptions you may not be eligible for certain federal jobs because specific statutes or laws prohibit employment depending on the criminal crime committed. But most federal jobs, questions about your criminal history don't appear on the initial job application because of the fair chance to compete for jobs regulation. But if you receive a conditional job offer for employment, you'll need to complete a declaration for federal employment and undergo a background that establishes suitability for employment. In addition to a background investigation, a person needs to be eligible and qualified in terms of eligible means being part of a particular group of people the agency can hire from that the job was originally posted for. These are called the different hiring path to help applicants understand their eligibility to a position, i.e. open to the public, a veteran, Native American, military spouse, so on. In total, there's 15 different hiring paths. However, a person involved in the justice system is not one of those groups. For more information about this process, see the resource link page, U.S. information about the Fair Chance to Compete regulation. See the OPM's final regulation to the federal agencies on criminal history. Please read the entire regulation and all hiring policies for any federal agency you might consider applying to, as the information in this presentation is just changed and not legally binding. Next slide, please. So now we move on to careers in energy. This general career, W-2 or 1099, working in the energy environment. DOE has created several websites and several website-based resources called career maps. These career maps explore different job opportunities within energy. They describe dozens of different careers as well as various routes for advancement. Some of the maps include advancement, hydropower, and many more. For more information about careers and energy, see the career maps on the resource page. Next slide, please. Now, part that I'm really excited about is entrepreneurship in energy. Now, for some people, working for someone else is not going to work for them, or maybe the stigma of a background keeps more doors closed than open, and that's okay. This is why we're building bridges with community partners like Ms. Carrie at the Dannon Project, and she's built bridges with the Minority Business Development Agency. But let me tell you why these relationships are important for persons involved in the justice system. Because of the bipartisan investment in Jobs Act, which we've already learned about, the MBDA program became a federal government agency dedicated solely to supporting minority-owned businesses entrepreneurs and helping them overcome barriers to economic success. This legislation is the biggest investment in minority business community in the last 6 years. And the NBVA Center also just so happens to be have an entrepreneurship education program for formerly incarcerated persons, where the Danon Project Miscarriage has been a best-in-class program dedicated to helping persons involved in the justice system for years. Next slide, please. This is how we're building these relationships. The Department of Energy wants to work with community partners like Jail USA and the Danon Project to expand employment opportunities for formerly incarcerated individuals. We want to work with partners that have a clear focus on helping justice-involved individuals across the nation make the biggest impact in energy. The relationships with our community partners is key to navigating opportunities. At this time, I would also like to thank the hard work that all of these organizations are doing to help move the needle forward for this environment. Next slide. On our resource page, which everyone will be emailed, on the left-hand side, you will find the links for valuable information we talked about today, the DOE website, to employment resources. In the bottom right-hand corner, you will also find information from our Ask Us Anything series. Ask Us Anything is a monthly open meeting designed for businesses, organizations, citizens to meet with the minority business and workforce team at us to help understand what's going on in the environment of energy. In the upper right-hand corner, you will find a QR code from our 2023 Minority Business Development Enterprise Connect Summit video. And for 2024, the team will be in Los Angeles, California, bringing opportunities to minority businesses.
Our why, the voices of those with impact that are often missing. So if you exist as a framework, that's a powerful training for individuals. How do we do this? We have a multi-faceted training. We also have more introductory courses called Virtual which provide more small opportunities for a weekend month that often prepares for the rest of our year-long. Finally, we are in the process of cropping up our program, which will then plan to go out of the process that will require from and the key recommendation that we really tried as a cooperative, we have to put in the process. What I love about our other report that came out was basically writ large. We are calling on the federal government to serve policy and certain things like the government approach to address the harm. So out of this foundational economic we launched with our previous call today, which is our sentence. And this is a first already element. So the focus this morning, obviously, is on fair chance of hiring, as I mentioned. The idea of fair chance of hiring also looks like fair chance.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, and you're listening to a series from the U.S. Department of Justice. Energy, Justice, and Equity Division on Second Chance Hiring. You're listening to Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know if you join us on a regular basis that that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. If you are interested in calling into our program today, as we are delving into the issue of recidivism. That means people who are coming out of the penal systems, not giving any resources, not giving any skill sets that will enable them to make a living wage, which throws young black males to go back to the crime from the environments which were underfunded in the beginning and failing school systems. We can speak to that because we spent years as a public school teacher here in Washington, D.C., and we know the issues, we know the problems. The issue is, what are the solutions? Well, this is the solution. These are the opportunities. And the National Association of Blacks and Solar, which I am the sitting president, as well as the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, is doing what we can to educate our communities through this platform, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on Black America. Now, if you join us on a regular basis, you know that the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy projects, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African and African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the high effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives to bring down the under and underemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally, nationally, and throughout the diaspora. Also, to educate the black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know I'm your host, Ronald Buffet. And it gets a little gray in a lot of ways after I've been at this for so long and have met so many people who say they are concerned, but they are not concerned because they have a problem with the messenger rather than the message that the messenger brings. So with that being said, is speak with that of cold hair of wool. And at last time I checked, when I look in the mirror, my physical features meet that. So maybe that's why I've had so many issues with folks who look like me, have been given their marching orders by folks who don't look like me to provide any form of resources for the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC. We are the only ones bringing this information to you after the federal government does their little webinar, ladies and gentlemen. There's not a radio, there's not a talk show program out here within the online community that addresses these issues week to week. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get right back to what we do every day. We try to bring news that you can definitely use here on the platform of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go back to giving out the necessary and providing the information that our community needs to be hearing.
Thank you so very much. Good morning. I'm Carrie Pruitt. Next slide, please. We are a 23-year-old nonprofit organization providing a robust record of collaboration with multiple federal agencies and community associates, primarily focusing on the pre-release and reinstatement of several high-risk groups. Next slide, please. The Danim Project has aided over 10,000 unique individuals and families, unemployed and underemployed individuals and adults transitioning from prison, as well as their relatives, jailers, including but not limited to young adults and adult returning citizens, those who are educationally and occupationally disadvantaged, victims of indigent generational poverty. Our exhaustive and comprehensive strategy always involves cooperation and integration, working intimately with regional and federal government entities, community-oriented organizations, and stakeholders related to marginalized communities. GDP is widely recognized for its workforce training, development, entrepreneurship, and community reentry programs. Next slide, please. Today, I want to highlight some of the problems that our previously incarcerated or justice impacted population face, but also provide you with the solutions that we've implemented, along with some of our partners that was mentioned previously, MPCA, as well as the Department of Labor. Next slide, please. So some of the barriers, of course, would be discrimination, insensitivity of community, lack of effective communication skills, some of the fees and fines that our participants face upon returning home, anxiety, those are just a few, as well as stabilization, lack of stabilization. One of the things that the Dana Project has been able to do successfully is some of the services that we offer range from free and post, case administration, community health services, including complementary health checks and medical and behavior health referrals, the chronic illness, self-management, credentials, occupational training, leading to the acquisition of credentials and licenses across 24 different career pathways. We are also licensed by the Alabama Department of Post-Secondary, and we also provide career preparedness, coaching, and placement services. Next slide, please. The Dana Project is thrilled to collaborate with the Department of Energy on providing skills, training, and certification to justice-impacted populations for working in electric vehicle battery charging stations. This partnership represents a significant opportunity to empower individuals with justice involvement by offering training in a rapidly growing and innovative industry. By focusing on EV technology and infrastructure, the program not only addresses the critical need for skilled workers in this sector, but also provides a pathway to sustainable employment and economic stability for individuals with criminal backgrounds. Now, we were seeking opportunities for our target group gaining qualifications and skills for energy sector jobs. Consequently, we started investigating opportunities to develop a training program aimed at these groups and is enthusiastic about the potential of this fresh endeavor. Next slide, please. The Department of Energy involvement brings credibility and resources to the initiative, enabling the Dana Project to access state-of-the-art training materials, industry expertise, and certification programs. This ensures that participants receive high-quality training that aligns with industry standards, increasing their employability and competitiveness in the job market. Moreover, working in EV battery charging seems a rare pathway with ample opportunities for advancement and long-term growth. This emerging EV market is expected to continue expanding, creating a demand for skilled technicians to install, maintain, and operate charging infrastructure. By equipping justice-impacted individuals with the necessary skills and certifications to work in this field, the Dana Project is not only addressing workforce shortages, but also helping individuals build meaningful careers and break the cycle of incarceration. Some of the collaborations that I'd like to point out, of course, that we are able to establish because of this initiative would be unions, HBCU community colleges, HUD, American Job Centers as well. Next slide, please. Some of our national potential partners because of this initiative are listed on the screen. Next slide, please. The collaboration with the Department of Energy underscores the importance of public-private partnerships in addressing societal changes such as workforce development and reentry. By leveraging the resources and expertise of both the public and private sectors, the Dana Project can maximize its impact and reach more individuals in need of support. Some of the greatest impacts, I think, as a result of bridging the justice-impacted population and energy careers would be reduced recidivism. between the data project and the Department of Energy for EV battery charging stations. Training represents an exciting opportunity to empower justice-impacted populations, to foster economic mobility, and contribute to the growth of a sustainable and inclusive workforce. Thank you for your time. And you can find out more about us, next slide, please. As shown on the screen, or www.dataproject.org. And with that, I would like to introduce to you Charlotte Harris, our next speaker for today. Charlotte.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you. Again, I'm Charlotte Harris from the Department of Labor, and I'm going to be providing an overview of the public workforce system through the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, commonly referred to as WIOA. And all of the information we've been presented thus far leads you to the public workforce system and how you can support individuals who are returning citizens and getting back an additional federal assistance through the public workforce system. Next slide. In general, the public workforce system is designed to help job seekers access employment while matching employers with skilled workers they need to compete in the global economy. So it's a supply and demand function. The demand is for the employers, and the public workforce system is the supplier to help meet that demand through providing access, providing training and support to help individuals succeed. Next slide, please. This slide here just illustrates a graphic illustration of how funds flow through the Department of Labor down to the local level to get to the people most in need. Our public workforce system, Department of Labor, who oversees the public workforce system, they provide funds down to the state level, the state workforce board, who sets strategic visions for their state and their local areas and the leadership. The governor of the state sets the board. He provides the leadership for the board, assigns people to the board, and also sits on the board at the state level, and again, sets the visions for their state. The state, in turn, sets the strategic vision for the local workforce development board, and that's where the rubber meets the road at the local workforce development board. Because our public workforce system is a decentralized system, means the local levels know best what works for their system. The funds and the policies are set ahead, but the operationalizing of that system is done at the local level. At the local level, there's a local workforce board who sets the priorities, training priorities, and work priorities for their local areas. The local workforce board is made up primarily of employers. The local workforce boards are required to have at least a 51% business membership on the, so they know the local demands of the workforce in their area. This function is carried out through your local American Job Center. You saw that on Carrie's last slide, the American Job Center. The American Job Centers are what operationalizes the local policies to help people get the work they need and businesses to get the workers that they need. This local American Job Center, people typically refer to it in your areas as the unemployment office, but the brand name is the American Job Center. This is the federal brand name, and you will find that in all 50 states and territories, a local American Job Center. Again, this is where people go locally, job seekers, as if they need, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And there are also service providers in your local areas that are part of the network. These service providers provide specific services in the network. It could be like a youth provider providing a space for youth to go to receive additional service, or for a specialized dislocated workers, which I'll describe later, to get additional assistance in the workforce system. But again, this is a snapshot to show you what the decentralized system looks like. Next slide. Innovation and Opportunity Act. Again, decentralized system led by local businesses to deliver workforce service. ICE Career and Training Services through the nation's 2,300-plus American job centers. That's a lot, and you're going to see a snapshot of what that looks like on a map next. But the link here in your slide, if you click on that link, it will take you to one of our web pages that will give you access to all of these American job centers. Access the link, you will type in your city or your area code, and it will provide for you the American job center in your area or the range of job centers in your area. Under WIOA, priority of services must be provided to low-income individuals. Before first come, first serve was the priority, under WIOA it changed that low-income individuals have priority at receiving services of the funds that are available through that center. And WIOA also identified 19 required partners that are required to provide services through the American Job Centers, and I'll show you what that looks like later. Next slide. This here is a snapshot of the reach, the national reach. It's the 50 states plus the territories of where American Job Centers are located. Click on that link that I showed you before or on this one. Put in your area code and it will connect you with the American Job Center closest to you. There are comprehensive and American and affiliate American Job Centers. The comprehensive centers mean that all of the 19 required partners must provide access to their programs and services through the American Job Center. And the affiliate ones are like satellite centers. All of the partners do not have to be there. Each local area is required to have at least one comprehensive center where all of the services can be accessed, but not all required to have affiliates. Next slide. This here is a snapshot of the required partners that are established through statute, through the law. And this is just to show you some of these you have heard earlier during different presentations of the partners. All of these partners are required to provide access to their services through the American Job Center. They don't have to physically be in the center, but they have to provide access, meaning they could come there part-time to be a part of the center, train one of the other four partners to be able to share information about their project, or they could leave information to have available through the center so that someone looking for a job, training, or business information can get it through one stop. The Department of Labor has several programs that are required partners, as you will see here, to include Job Corps, Youth Bill, Reentry. Department of Labor has a few programs that are required partners, HUD, or Housing and Urban Development, as well as HHS are required partners within the one-stop system. So it makes sense. So if a person that is looking for work and has barriers, we don't want them to have to go to a lot of different places to get assistance when they're looking for work. But these are the required partners that are there. Now, the workforce system can have any other additional partner they think that might be helpful or beneficial to that local area or the local board. Excuse me. These are the required ones, but it could be any other partner that makes sense for this local area. Next slide. Now, the public workforce system is funded through formula programs, which in a nutshell means that there's a formula that the federal government establishes that determines how much money each local area is going to be. That formula is based on the number of people living there, the unemployment rate, and other factors. And for Department of Labor, these are the eligible people for these programs in Title I. The adult program, anybody that's 18 years or older can be served with these funds. For the Title I program for the adult dislocated worker and youth, there's an eligibility requirement for that program. All of these services, of course, are at no cost to the individual or to the business. The adult, again, 18 and over, low income, individuals with basic skills eligibility category. Another are dislocated worker programs. Dislocated workers are individuals who have lost their job through no fault of their own. They're either collecting unemployment or eligible for unemployment and need assistance getting back to work. And then there are the youth programs. The youth programs are from ages 16 to 24, and we have in-school and out-of-school youth programs and services available through the American Job Center. The Title III program that's offered there is the employment service. This is one that individuals are most familiar with because this is for anybody that's looking for work and wants to use the American Job Center, come in looking for jobs, job postings, wanting to use the resource room or the computer, wanting to file unemployment, and that's for anybody that wants to come in looking for assistance through your public work. Next slide. This is just a couple of key changes with WIOA that might impact, of course, the communities that we're all serving, but just as involved specifically for this one. Priority of service provided to low-income individuals regardless of funds. What changed from WIA, the Workforce Investment Act, to WIOA, local area guys, they set up a percentage, say 70%. Once 70% of the funds were expended, then the priority of service kicked in. Under WIOA, priority of services, low income, there's not a threshold. All low-income individuals have priority of service for program services when entering the job center. Also, priority of services have expanded to those who are basic skills deficient. It could be language barriers. Any other barrier could be considered priority of service in this area. So those are some key changes to this regulation and statute. Next slide. Supply and demand, I talked about that earlier. The demand is for the businesses. Businesses need trained workers. Businesses need assistance for jobs. They need to put the jobs out there. They need to find individuals. These are some of the services that are provided through the American Job Center. Each American Job Center also has business services representatives there that are staffed to specifically assist businesses with their employment needs. It could be posting jobs, having repairs, providing rapid response services, and that is if there's a layoff or something that's going on where the employer is losing jobs, the American Job Center staff can go out there and assist the workers and employers with helping their workers transition to new work. Customized labor market information for the employer, and some other kind of training opportunities that are available to assist businesses and employers who are needing work. So even if they want to provide incumbent worker training for people who want to get better skills, increase skills of their current work. Okay, next slide. Those are just additional services for business services. The supply side, what's available for the job seeker needing work or needing help or needing to transition back to work. There are some basic services that are available, meaning anybody can get these services coming in. When I talked about Title III earlier, these are a lot of the services that are there. For individuals that are needing more specific or more case management kinds of services, these are other kinds of services that are available, again, to ensure that supply for the employers, the job seeker training has access to information, job search and placement, follow-up once they get a job, outreach assessments are available for individuals needing that work or needing to get back to work. Internships, work experiences, comprehensive and specialized assessments. So there's a lot of services available for individuals looking for work to get to those skills that we were talking about earlier with all of these energy available skills. Next slide. Training. We also provide training in the public workforce system. Training, job training is for individuals through your American Job Centers, again, at no cost to the individual. Next slide. And these here are with the youth programs, again, part of the supply side. For the youth that are involved or enrolled in these programs, there are 14 program elements that are focused on with the staff at the American Job Center. And the youth enrolled in the program can be in one. I'm going to have my colleague, Alex Green, to come in to talk about reentry employment opportunities. Alex.
Thanks, Charlotte. My name is Alex Green. I'm chief of the program at the Department of Labor. And our reentry employment opportunities program, our mission is to inform the public worker system on how to best serve justice involved youth, young adults, and adults who are currently or formerly incarcerated. Rio, we're authorized under the WIMA Act of 2014, and we test the effectiveness of service delivery models found in community, faith-based organizations, and government systems for their adaptability in assisting the reentry population into the workforce. Grants awarded, and we actually have two that are currently open right now for organizations to apply to and will close in early April. One is Pathway Home. This project focuses on pre- and post-release services that include apprenticeship, case management, occupational training, and in-demand industries, and much more. And our second currently open funding opportunity announcement is called Growth Opportunity, which is a program we developed that contributes to community violence and young adults and aligns with a comprehensive federal strategy to combat gun violence and other violent crimes while also providing paid work experience, mentoring, leadership development, and unsubsidized job placement. Approximately 100 Rio grantees have operated each year through 2015 for 7,000 people combined annually, and our projects also promote collaboration and coordination between community-based organizations, foundations, state and local justice agencies, community colleges, and the workforce system. Also, a part of our appropriations is that we have allotted $30 million, depending on the appropriate amount, for two nationally regional engineers serving justice involved and young folks and individuals who left school prior to graduating. Our appropriation also directs us to prioritize communities facing high levels of crime and poverty. So that is just a brief overview of Rio, some of our current and applicable work. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Charlotte.
Thanks, Alex. Next slide. Just a quick thing on building a relationship with the workforce system. Three quick questions you ask yourself. Determine how your customers can benefit from the services offered through the partnership. What you heard, what can your customers benefit from? Next, how can the services that our agency provides, that agency is your agency, supplement or complement the public workforce system? Questions. Then go to the third point, reach out to your local workforce force. Another link, it takes you directly to our website, which can, again, put your social or zip code in there, and it will connect you with the workforce board in your area. It will also provide the name and phone numbers of the current workforce board. Next slide, the last slide. This here are just tools and resources from the U.S. Department of Labor. Career One Stop helps to provide tools to help job seekers explore careers and salaries, that information. There's a business center on Career One Stop for your business partners. My Next Move gives students information on their career next move. And the next one is just reports, studies, papers, a database of comprehensive information to help make informed decisions. And with that, I will turn it back to Ben. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for your work and your time today. We've got a couple more minutes to address some questions today before we close. So there's been a few general questions related to this theme. I'm going to read one of them here before giving a brief answer before we close. Someone said, what opportunities are there for establishing nonprofits and profit-generating institutions? So kind of an entrepreneurial question and others about how to get started, kind of in summary. So I just want to say it's closed. If you're curious about how to get started, maybe information overload, I'd encourage you to go back to this, fast forward or rewind to the presentation or the section that's most relevant to you. There's a lot of resources here that will be available to you embedded in the slide deck. But in general, just to reiterate, just to answer the question to leave you with this, if you're curious about how to get started, there are a lot of local and free resources. So I'm going to provide one in the chat for everyone to see, so you can also go back and copy and paste it and just go into Google. But if you're on Google Maps, just type in whatever your community is, your local SBA, Small Business Administration, or your local MBA, the Minority Business Development Association, or your local American Jobs Center. There are paid staff there that care about you. And it's free for you to go and ask them questions. Also, look for the local paid apprenticeships and pre-apprenticeships for your state community. And then there's three other organizations that have been helping me as I've organized some of the speakers and some of the slides as we've been initiating this project. Three organizations that really stood out for me that do a great job also serving folks with a justice-impacted background. One is called the Prison Entrepreneurship Program, PEP. Another one is Sherry Garcia's Cornbread Hustle, the staffing agency. And then Harley Blakeman's Honest Job, that's the job board that you can access nationwide. Cornbread Hustle, Sherry Garcia's staffing agency is based in Texas, but if you reach out to these organizations, these last three, even if you can't make it down specifically wherever, first job, or how to start your first company or your nonprofit. So I want to leave you with that thought. Also stay tuned for our next event. It should be coming soon to be announced. And please continue to fight for progress in our nation and to continue to do the good work that you're all doing. So here comes this chat. Thank you again for your time and have a great rest of your week. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you were just listening to Second Chance Hiring and Energy coming out of the Office of Equity and Diversity at the U.S. Department of Energy. I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis that we bring you programs you're not hearing anyplace else. But with that being said, we're going to sort of take a pause, slight pause for the cause. We'll be right back here on Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And we're going to look at new funding solicitations available. And you'll be able to find that on our website at Positive Change.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it?
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Ladies and gentlemen, as we were saying, we're going to sort of switch. This is a special edition today. Our show here on the platform of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, as we indicated to you, is that there are a lot of things going on, and we're going to look at new funding solicitations available. Now, you'll be able to find this on our website at positivechangepc.com. That's positivechangepc.com. You want to go over to our GoFundMe news and events tab, and you want to click on that, and you'll see funding news. And if you scroll down, you'll see dates that are just passed this past week. Juvenile drug treatment court programs, strengthening the ICAC technology investigative capacity, support for the Adams Walsh Act implementation grant program. Now, these dates were are still in front of us, ladies and gentlemen. You're looking at 5/28/24. The deadline, Justice Grant's deadlines are all here under the Juvenile Treatment Court Program. Grant's deadlines is the 5/14/24, Justice Grant deadline 5/28/24, strengthening the ICAC technology investment capacity. OJJDP, which is the Office of Justice, Juvenile, Delinquent under the Justice Department, and you'll find out that those grant programs are 5/14/24. Just Grants deadline is 5/28/24. Support for the Adams Walsh Act Implementation Grant Program. It's called the SMART Grant Program. Deadline is 5/16/24, Just Grants deadline is 5/30/24. The VOCA Victim Assistance Formula Grant Program, the deadline is 5/21/24. Just Grants deadline is 5/28/24. And you'll find all of the necessary deadlines. Then you have upcoming events. You want to look at Enhancing Youth Defense Solicitation Webinar. That's going to be held on, which was actually this past week at 3/29/24, OJ Grant Application Resource Guide. You can ask, it's called OVC, Frequent Asked Questions. It's going to be April 1st, 2024 at 1 p.m. Family-Based Alternative Justice Program Solicitation Webinar is going to be April 2nd, 2024 at 1 p.m. Responding to the Fiscal Year 2024 SCA Improving Substance Use Disorder Treatment and Recovery Outcomes for Adults in Reentry Program Solicitation is 4/2/24, the 2nd of April. So it's right upon us, ladies and gentlemen. Post-conviction testing on DNA Evidence Program Solicitation Webinar is 4/3/24. Anti-trafficking Housing Assistance Program Pre-Apprentice Webinar is going to be 4/4/24 at 3 p.m. Smart Prosecutions Solutions Solicitation Webinar is going to be April 9th, 2024. At 3 p.m. Now, all of these dates, ladies and gentlemen, there are a long list. To get started in Grants.gov is where you'll find the first steps to apply for the Office of Justice Programs Grants Register, or confirm your Grants.gov registration profile and the user's role, review required the SF 424 and SFLLL search on the OJP funding opportunities. Review the solicitations. You can apply. Important resources, grants, Just Grants, Department of the Department of Justice Grants Management System, OJP Grant Application Resource Guide. You'll be able to find that information. All that information will be available under our News and Events tab. Ladies and gentlemen, now, we have made a commitment and we're going to keep that commitment to our listening audience. On the Corporate Transparency Act, the filing requirement, which most of you who have been following this platform know that we have put together information concerning the Corporate Transparency Act filing requirement, which kicked in on January 1, 2024. Now, the Corporate Transparency Act originally, well, the bill was introduced in 2019. It was passed in 2021. That bill number is H.R. 2515. That's H.R. 2515. And it is going to be very, very impactful, ladies and gentlemen, as we're looking at this affecting some 35 or 32 million non-employee businesses. Now, this bill is disproportionately impacting African-American women-owned and other minority-owned women non-employee businesses, which according to the U.S. Census data, 36.7% of 10 million. So we're talking about 3.6 million businesses of the nation's non-employed businesses. These without paid employees, and they had gross receipts for fiscal year 2022 of $307.9 billion. I ain't said nothing about no million. I said $1 billion for fiscal year 2022. The world of work has become more complex, and because of that, different types of employee classifications, as a result, more businesses are hiring what they call freelancers, contractors, and employees to handle long-term, short-term projects in their organization. The U.S. lists in 2023 that you had approximately 70 million freelancers. 9.6 million of these are self-employed professionals, and their numbers are still growing. But 97% of these businesses are required to file the FIN BOI report in 2024. We're in 2024, ladies and gentlemen. It is March 31st, 2024. Less than 10% of these small business owners know that their BOI filing obligation. The question is, do you avoid penalties that start at $500 a day up to $10,000? And there's 2 years of federal jail time if you can't pay the fine. Now, there also is other teeth in this bill where the fines go from $500 a day up to $250,000 a day, 5 years of federal jail time if you put the misleading or false information when you're filing this report. So you have to be very, very careful and truthful in this process that you can substantiate everything that you're saying that you are doing and who owns this, your company, who's responsible for filing in this company. You can all find that information by logging on where, ladies and gentlemen? The PositiveChangePC.com. If you need assistance, you can click on the blue link at the very top that says corporate BOA filing report by file forms, and you will find out that they are properly licensed with the Department of Treasury to provide the platform which you can utilize to fill out this form. There are different programs. They start, some start as low as $200, go up to $5 or $1,000, depending on how many companies that you may have under your umbrella. Because some people are running 4, 5, 6, 7 LLCs, limited liability corporations, in order under their business model. And that's just a fact of life. So if you're one of those people, you need to check into this. Now, the Corporate Transparency Act was supposed to be enacted in 2021 to mitigate illicit financial activities by requiring most companies conducting business in the U.S. to report specific information about the beneficial owners to the Federal Crimes Enforcement Network, which is known as FIN. FIN is the Bureau of the U.S. Treasury, whose mission is to combat financial crimes by collecting and analyzing information about financial transactions, combat money laundering, terrorism financing, and other financial crimes. TA reporting requirements take effect January 1 of 2024, and it is the implementation by the business owners and their professional service providers are far-reaching. Now, also, ladies and gentlemen, the third tier of this teeth in this bill is if you have over, they can identify that you had over $100,000 to go through your bank account in the last 12 months, and they suspect that you are doing something illegal, or probable cause to give them the rights to come after you, the fines can start at $500 a day. They go up to $500,000, and there's 10 years of federal jail time in the federal jail system. Now, the problem I have with this whole piece, ladies and gentlemen, is that it has been declared unconstitutional by a federal judge. Yes, I didn't stutter, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you that the Corporate Transparency Act, a lawsuit was brought by the National Small Business Trade Association here in Washington, D.C. It was filed in the 7th District of Alabama. A federal judge, it was filed on March 1st, 2024. A federal judge took this thing up within hours after the legal memorandum was filed with the courts and ruled it was unconstitutional. This you will be able to find under our news and events tab. This is a 53-page memorandum opinion issued by the judge. And it is very, very clear on where the judge and how he viewed this as overreaching and overbearing. The problem with this specific ruling, ladies and gentlemen, is that it only covers the 65,000 members of the National Small Business Association, and they are located in all 50 states, but you had to be a member of their organization as of March 1st, 2024 to be covered. Everybody else is still exposed to this draconian piece of legislation. And I'm saying that because when you check and see who are exempted from this, you'll find that everybody who got money that can launder money don't have to file a report. I have serious issues with this. I am making this very, very clear. If you incorporated your business as of before January 1 of 2024, you have until January 4th of 2025 to file this report. If you incorporated a new business after January 1 of 2024, you only have 90 days. Ladies and gentlemen, if you incorporated within the first week of this year, January 2nd, in that week, this will be your 90 will be up. These fines can start running and you're on the clock. So with that being said, this is an emergency. So we will continue to provide this information on a weekly basis when we present our weekly platform of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the close of another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We hope that we brought you news that you can definitely use. But till next week, we say go in peace as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing.
I can tell.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.